Going beyond the headlines for the month of July. Senator Collins grabbed the headlines last week and made the rounds on the Sunday morning talk shows yesterday, all for her pivotal role as the Senate debated, then voted down, a Republican health care plan. But that was far from the only Maine news this past month. It was just 3.5 weeks ago, after all, that Maine had a brief but historic government shutdown. And we're starting to find out what kind of impact the new state budget will have, including the closure of school-based health clinics. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll look back at what made headlines in the month of July. News traditionally slows down in the summertime, but not this summer. From NIPS to real estate prices, which stories mattered most to you? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios in Augusta, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It seems as though I've started each of the month in review programs recently the same way, but oh, what a month of news. Today we're going to look back at what made headlines in Maine and beyond in July. Yes, it is the last day of July. In the studio with me, Kathleen Fleury, editor-in-chief of Down East Magazine. Ben Bragdon is the editorial page editor for the Kennebec Journal and Morning Sentinel. And Steve Missler is Maine Public Radio's chief political correspondent. As always, we want to hear from you. Which story stood out to you? Which are going to kind of go down in history? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. We have to start with Senator Susan Collins, whose historic vote last week was one of three Republican votes which derailed a last-ditch Republican health care plan. I want to read something from yesterday's Bill Nemitz column in the Portland Press Herald. He's talking about the courage Senator Collins showed, and he's quoting Senator King. He says, Senator King said on Friday, "In my public life, or in my life generally, I don't think I've ever seen a public official manifest greater courage and commitment to their constituents as Susan Collins has over the last week. And the people of Maine need to understand that." Steve Missler, give us some sense of how politically difficult it was for Senator Collins to do what she did and the significance of it.
Well, I think in terms of the political difficulty, the biggest thing for me was that, you know, Senator John McCain from Arizona got a lot of the immediate press attention from, because he actually cast the decisive vote that killed that bill, right? And so he was sort of lauded as a hero for doing that. But if you look back on it, I think Senator Collins and Senator Lisa Murkowski from Alaska were the ones that had to make the most difficult decision, and they did it earlier than anybody else. And I think they had, by doing that, they probably subjected themselves to a lot more pressure than John McCain did, who just kind of swooped in at the last second and put thumbs down on this bill, and that was the end of it. In this case, these two women senators basically they stepped out from their party, and they're, you know, subjected themselves to blowback from not only the Trump administration and the White House, but also probably from their party and their activists back at home. We'll see how that affects Senator Collins. Right now, I'm seeing a big uptick from criticism on the right, even though she's getting a lot of praise on the left. That's the political sort of dynamic, and I think that that might speak to why Senator King thought that it was such a courageous vote on her part.
And Ben, you read your paper, or you need to read the Bangor Daily News, and the comments are going both directions. You've got people who are furious with Senator Collins or calling her names far worse than Rhino, and then people who are just so relieved and happy about her role and proud.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like a spot that Senator Collins has to get comfortable with. If she wants to move forward here, she's, as you said, she's always got the tag of Rhino on her. She's used to that. But the last few months, especially since Trump into office, I think she's been really surprised by the anger from the left, from people she thought that at least saw her as someone who votes her own conscience and not the party line. Yet there she was a few months ago up in Bangor being protested over and over again. And there's just really this feeling on both sides where you're either with us or you're against us. And Susan Collins is right in the middle of that. She kind of finds herself not a establishment Republican in D.C. anymore and not kind of the darling of the moderate as she was before, maybe. That's a tough area to negotiate.
Kathleen, one of the many reasons we love having you on Maine Calling is you represent the millennials here at this table. What are you hearing from your friends about Senator Collins' decision last week and the way she's conducted herself through all of these negotiations?
It's funny. My social media feed was filled with the stories of thanks, and I thought it was particularly remarkable that she said in her entire career she had never had the airport applaud her when she got off the plane. And I think that's telling something. I also saw a few pictures yesterday of a plane flying in southern Maine with a "Thank you, Senator Collins" sign. That's what I've seen with my peer group in Maine. And I think anecdotally, there's a lot of people are grateful that she listened to, I think, an overwhelming response in Maine of people that are really in need on health care. Of course, I think she's accurate in also saying we need to do work. She seems to be rolling up her sleeves and saying, this is not the end. We need to dig in and make, you know, premiums go down and the healthcare better, which I also am really grateful for.
All right. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. We can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Steve, it was July, because it was the 4th of July weekend, in which the state government shut down. It seems like a really long time ago, doesn't it? But, you know, at the time, well, let me put it this way. Was that an historic government shutdown, or did it really not turn out to be that big of a deal?
That's a really good question, because I remember when it happened, and then when it ended a few days later, I was trying to think of it. How will this be looked at later in historic terms? And I got to tell you, I don't know. I mean, it was so avoidable because they had really resolved the key contentious issue, which was the education funding and the surcharge that voters approved in November via question two. Those were the sticking points in that budget. And everybody knew that that was going to be the issue for months, basically after November 8th. And that, you know, it took them to the 11th hour to get to that point to solve that issue. Then suddenly all these other ones started cropping up because the House Republicans and Governor LePage wanted other things in that budget. And so, but at the end of the day, those other things are going to seem pretty small when you look back, I think, from in a couple of months. Even that day, they seemed small. I mean, we're talking about they were fighting for a 1.5%. They wanted to get rid of a 1.5% increase in the lodging tax, which really only affects visitors, tourists, for the most part. And a couple other things that I can't even name right now because they're so obscure, and I don't think most Mainers could name them either or think that they're important to them. So anyway,
you know, it's interesting that you mentioned the lodging tax, though, because I know in my district, Representative Owen Casas was really hearing from a lot of B&B owners and hotel owners in Camden, which is fairly, you know, would lean on the liberal side of things, that the lodging tax was really controversial to his constituents. So I thought that was an interesting thing. You know, I think history might be nicer to this because it was such a shared experience across the U.S. Like, there were many states or several states. So I remember the day being so mad and driving in the car and listening to all these reports about other states in the same situation. And somehow it took the edge off for me of realizing this was perhaps a little more macro than just dysfunction in Maine.
Yeah, that's right. I ended up filing a story for NPR about that very issue.
I think it was you I was listening to.
Well, hopefully. I think Wisconsin, New Jersey, there was a couple others that I can't recall. Well, Illinois, they didn't have a state budget for nearly 2 years. I mean, that place was a total failed state.
And a few more in New England, too. I think Rhode Island and Massachusetts all had difficulties, too.
That's right. And I think what distinguished Maine a little bit from the other states is that government actually shuts down, whereas when Wisconsin, when they didn't pass a budget at midnight on June 30th, they actually have this provision, which Maine may want to consider if we're going to keep going to this brinksmanship on the budget every year, which basically ensures that the current budget stays in place until they work out a new one. That might not be a bad idea for Maine.
Yeah, I don't think anyone will remember this. I don't think most Mainers remember it now, and it's been a month. We'll all get reminded in the next election when the House Republicans run as defenders of the state budget and You know, the details won't matter at that point. They stood up for whatever they stood up for, and they can say they stood up for what they believed in, and they can have the governor on their back as they run for re-election. In that way, they want it politically. I mean, if you look at the budget, I think it's a pretty good compromise for both sides, and probably where it would have been a week before, or 2 weeks before, or 3 weeks later. So, you know, I don't know what purpose it served, except to show that the House Republicans and the governor were still relevant in this whole thing, and still kind of a force to be reckoned with here in Augusta.
Yeah, I think one of the other things too, if I could just jump in real quick, is that. One of the reasons why I think Ben might be right that people won't remember this that much is that the timing of this was really key. It fell on on a Saturday of a July 4th weekend where
The state parks were open.
It was a really shrewd move by the governor to make that a quote-unquote essential service, because if it wasn't, that's where you'd start to see some of the blowback,
like
I think.
The Chris Christie state park picture.
Not only did he make the mistake of closing the beaches, he decided to show up and
take advantage
of the closed beach. Yeah.
Well, we are starting to find out more about the budget, the state budget. This seems to be what happens every year, because when it finally passes, you know, it's so long and so complicated. But one of the things that's emerged is that school health clinics are slated to be shut down. Ben, are we going to see other things that are this surprising and to those who run the program?
Yeah, I'm sure the state budget's huge, as you know, and when they're arguing over these things, we get the top 4 or 5 points and what is moving and who gets who's getting the headline. But there's all these little things in it that come out after, like you said, and this is just one of them. And unfortunately, it's in an area, public health, where the state has really gone downhill in the last 5, 6, 7 years, you know, and we have far fewer public health nurses. We have the infrastructure is really suffering right now, and here's another blow to that for a relatively small amount of money that probably could have been found elsewhere. And they're not going to have this thing in their schools, and that's kind of a shame.
And 15 clinics in Maine. But Steve, we do have a surplus. Is there any chance the surplus money could be used to restore the school health clinics? Does it work that way?
Well, I mean, there could be a supplemental budget package that could restore some of these cuts, but you know, that wouldn't happen until next year. So you're talking about a full fiscal year for these schools that have received this funding. That won't. They're not going to get that money unless there's an emergency bill, budget bill that passes between now and then. But let's face it. I mean, this cut was the people who made this cut, who negotiated this cut, knew what this cut was, and so the idea that they're going to come back to the table to restore it, I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen. At least not in the near term.
It's funny you guys were talking about all those little things. I know in my community they were so excited because the certification for home midwives got funded in this budget, which is an example of like something really small. But again, on my social media and in my peer group, it was really exciting. So I do think it's so deep, and you just week after week keep discovering new details in the budget, which. Some make a lot of sense, and then others, like the school clinic. You know, I don't see who wins in that situation.
Yeah, there's a lot of spots in the budget, particularly Medicaid reimbursements for different services, like you talked about there, that were held up, that were cuts in the governor's proposal, but they got them back to zero basically, and that's great, and that's going to make sure that those services keep going as they are now, but. You can't do that for everything, I guess. And when you're, you know, you've got 100 things to fund and you can only fund 50 of them, then you're going to see stories like this.
Okay, so another story really affecting southern Maine predominantly, but throughout the state, the housing market.
Yeah.
Way, way, way hot in southern Maine. Houses being sold before they even come on the market. People battling it out for houses. Kathleen, is this surprise you?
Well, it's great in one sense in that it's a really good time to sell your house if you live in southern Maine, because you'll probably get an offer within a couple of days and it'll probably be above the asking price, and sometimes in cash, which is a pretty sweet scenario. My parents are both real estate agents, and so we were just talking about this today. The problem is that there's no inventory.
Right.
You know, so the prices are going up, and they're, you know, hot commodities because there aren't enough houses for sale to fit the demand.
And yeah. There's not much inventory in the what you would call real people price range. There are lots of houses that are above $1 million that have sat on the market for a long time.
Yeah, but these are, you know, I was just talking about one in somewhere outside of Brunswick that was a lovely, charming old farmhouse, but, you know, like not perfect. And just immediately above the asking price. So I think it's particularly difficult to find a house in that $200,000 to $400,000 range and get it because the inventory is so low.
And this is an issue in the city of Portland too, right? And I think that's why you're seeing, there was a report in the paper today about this explosion in subdivisions in the city, which you wouldn't think that they'd have much room to subdivide, but apparently they do. I mean, now they're looking at developing old farm property, for example, and, you know,
right, tracts of land people took for granted would stay open space forever, but they were really always just tracts of land that were privately owned.
That's right.
Yeah, and Ben, you've got some perspective from the rest of the state.
Well, no, there's plenty of housing in certain areas. If you want a condo in a nice area, you can probably find that. If you want expensive house, you could probably find that. But a 3-bedroom home at a moderate price, it's impossible.
In Cumberland County?
Right, in Cumberland County, until you get north. And then once you get into central and northern Maine, you find a kind of an entirely different situation. And, I was in some rural part. I was in Piscataquis County a couple weeks ago, and it seemed like every other house had a for sale sign on it. Maybe some of those people are looking to move down south. Well, good luck, because you're going to be selling a house at northern Maine prices and then trying to buy one at inflated southern Maine prices.
And I think perhaps these conversations aren't totally unrelated. The access to care and services is going down so much in rural Maine that I think people are, you know, there's a consequence to that.
Well, I mean, to bring it even back even further with Collins's vote on the ACA, I mean, one of our biggest concerns was the fate of rural hospitals under the Republican plan. The access to care that you just pointed out is a key point. It was a key concern of hers in that proposal.
Yeah, it's tough to be a young family in a lot of parts of the state. And so if you're looking to lay down roots, you might be looking down here. And if everyone's looking down here, then there's just not going to be enough for them. We haven't built enough housing in the last 5 or 10 years, enough family housing in the last 5 or 10 years, and now we're suffering from that.
And you say looking down here, we're having this conversation in Augusta. So even though you mentioned Cumberland County, Kathleen, we're also talking York County, Androscoggin County. I mean, we're going up the coast and up the turnpike as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
There's so much more to talk about. We haven't even talked about NIPS yet, but we do have to take a break. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainpublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Hope you'll join the conversation. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Lamy Wellahan Shoes, helping people in Maine communities through their shoe donation program, gathering and distributing gently worn shoes for Mainers in need.
Journalism is more than news. It's more than politics. It's more than what happens day to day. Journalism is about human lives. And public broadcasting, particularly Maine Public, does such a splendid job of giving us a light into the lives of our fellow citizens. We learn about people whose experiences have been different from ours, things that bind us more closely together and gives us a sense of that shared experience, makes for stronger communities, and only Maine Public is there to give us that illumination that makes us more connected. As a resource for the people of Maine, there's nobody that reports better on the State House. There's nobody that reports better on things that are going on of great interest to the state of Maine, whether they're features or breaking news stories, than Maine Public Broadcasting. It's a treasure, it's a resource, and we're very, very fortunate to have it. I'm Brenda Garand, I'm from Portland, and I support a bold future for Maine Public Broadcasting.
Our comprehensive campaign was a success because of your support. Thank you for your generosity and for helping Maine Public chart a bold future.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, The Month in Review. Joining me in our Augusta studio, Ben Bragdon, who's the editorial page editor for the Kennebec Journal and Morning Sentinel. Steve Missler is Maine Public Radio's chief political correspondent. Kathleen Fleury is the editor-in-chief of Down East Magazine. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We began the program by talking about Senator Collins and her health care vote. But, Ben, I understand there's a little breaking news on, or at least developing news on, when we talk about the political repercussions of this vote.
It's Collins.
Senator Collins. Yeah.
We saw
so many political repercussions going around. It's hard to keep it straight.
We saw the there was a report of the Bangor Daily News this morning had a report on GOP pig roast up in Somerset County, in which the governor appeared to say that if Susan Collins thinks she is going to come in and win a primary in Maine, then she should think again. And I think that really kind of underscores her issue here. I mean, I don't think, you know, anyone would be surprised to see her come in and win a statewide vote and win it easily. But getting through a primary might be difficult given the party's makeup. And it's certainly among the what she has to be weighing if she's thinking about coming home in 2 years.
Steve, is it possible that Senator Collins is going to face the kind of situation Senator Murkowski did, where she ended up losing a Republican primary but winning as a write-in candidate?
Yeah, I don't know. I still really wrestle with whether or not Senator Collins wants to run for governor. That's what we're talking about here, right? So I don't know. I mean, I really tried to sort of game this out in my head. Does she want to be governor? I think for legacy purposes, yes. I mean, she would, you know, she would be the first woman governor. It would be a huge thing, not just for her, but for the state, I think. And I think also, but that she has to weigh that against what could be an elevation in seniority in Congress and in Senate in particular.
She could be head of appropriations.
Could be the head of appropriations. Very, very powerful position. And she could do a lot of good for the state of Maine from that position in terms of funding and earmarks for Bath Iron Works on down. I think that's what she has to balance. And I don't know what's inside of her head yet in terms of, you know, what she thinks is more important. But I really do think she's ambivalent about it. I really do. Yeah. And we're going to find out in a few months.
I really wonder where she sees herself in the Senate now, especially after this last vote. And is she the one clear-headed mind who can stop some bad legislation? Or is she just someone who doesn't have a woman without a country down there? And does she want to have this fight over and over and over again where she's, taking both sides when she feels and like she's really doing the right thing, yet she can't do right from either side. Now she's taking a lot of getting a lot of good feelings from this last vote, but how long does that last when she backs the Republicans on the next thing? And does she really want to put up with that for?
It makes me so concerned, because if someone who can think thoughtfully about issues and go, you know, not strictly partisan, but thoughtful, if there's no place for someone like that in our country's government, right, we are in trouble.
Right. I mean, she saw Lindsey Graham, who is probably a lot like her, kind of occupies that same spot in the Senate. He got up and said, this is, I'm talking about the skinny repeal, said this is bad politics and this is bad policy. And then voted for it.
And then voted for it, that's right.
So, does she want to be in that sandlot any longer?
This pig roast that the governor said, was he talking about a governor's race, or was he talking about even a Senate, U.S. Senate race? Will she be primaried?
Oh, I think he was referring to the governor's race. She's a few years off from a Senate race.
Yeah, at least 2018. Beyond that. Excuse
who
me.
Who knows? Okay. Who knows where we'll be in 2022 or wherever. So.
Okay, I still want to talk about NIPS, but first we're going to go to Nemo, who's calling from Steuben. Hi, Nemo. Go ahead.
Hi. I want to congratulate the governor on his far-sighted view on raising funds and et cetera for cancer research. I'm sure that there are millions of mice in cages all over the country who applaud the governor's edict that 18-year-olds can smoke. Therefore, pay taxes.
Nemo, I'm not sure what you're talking about. Do any of you know what you're talking about?
Is this sarcasm? Or are you...
18-year-olds are now allowed to buy tobacco products.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Government wants to keep it that way.
Yeah.
Which is not healthy or good for anyone.
Subject. And, I think it's kind of unique that you're getting 18-year-olds to take up a lifelong habit that costs society hundreds of trillions of dollars over the course of years. So, I mean, the governor's right on again, destructive of the public's wealth. Good. Thank you,
Nemo,
Jennifer.
Thanks for your call. So the governor vetoed a bill that would raise the voting age, and it's not a veto-proof majority, Steve?
I don't believe that it was when it passed. If it did, it was close. And even when it passes, whether it had a veto-proof threshold doesn't matter these days. You see people flip-flop votes all the time up there. It doesn't matter. So I think we might see that with the solar bill,
for example. I was going to ask you, Ben, I know that you're working on a story about the solar bill. That's going to come up on Wednesday, that right?
Wednesday, yeah.
So that was passed by really wide margins in both the House and Senate. The governor's vetoed it, and...
Yeah, I mean, as Steve said, we've seen this before. Last year, a much bigger, more comprehensive solar bill passed with flying colors, veto-proof margins, and then it was vetoed, and then they didn't maintain those. They maintained those votes to override it. This is a much smaller bill. It's very narrow in its scope, but it would. I think most legislatures see this, that it would set us up. Give us kind of a 2-year window to work on whatever the next step is for solar, which is where everyone knows it has to go, something different than what we're doing now. I don't have a lot of confidence that it's going to keep those votes just because it's the same dynamics that played out last year. And until those change, I don't see them changing.
Yeah, I mean, they were actually supposed to take this vote up back in, I think it was late June, and they tabled it. They sat on it, which when you do that, you're basically subjecting... you're allowing the lobbyists to do their work. And there are a ton of lobbyists flocking to this bill on both sides, you know, to be fair. But what they do during that time is just work over lawmakers until they just get exhausted. And I don't know, you know, how their votes are guided at that point. But they do. I mean, they get hit pretty hard. So
I don't know about others, but I find it so frustrating as a consumer, because for the past 5 years, we've been trying to do something like solar or, more energy efficient. We started with insulation. But it's just so frustrating as a consumer to know that you want to move in that direction, but to have the hurdles still is really frustrating.
Yeah.
It's not only that there are bad rules in place and they're not great. It's that no one knows what the rules are going to be in a month,
right,
or 2 months, or 5 years.
Yeah. So if you're Kathleen, you don't want to make an investment not knowing if something's going to change.
And you can't afford to. If there's going to be a change that will make it more affordable in the next years, we would absolutely do it. So I really look forward to having some stability and like a path forward. And I think a lot of people in Maine feel the same way.
Yeah. Well, Kathleen, let me ask you a personal question then. Governor LePage says that this is a benefit for rich people. Is there something I don't know about you?
Yeah, no. And I think that's actually part of the problem, is that renewable energy cannot be just for rich people. You can't have it so that electric cars are only accessible to people making over $200,000 a year. That's not going to change our situation. And so that's what I actually find so frustrating, is that for the normal person, which I would classify myself as one, it's not as accessible as it needs to be, but it's desired. So you could get into all the economic philosophy, but I know anecdotally, at least in my community, there's a real desire. And until it becomes more accessible for the normal person and cost-effective, it's out of reach.
Back to Senator Collins. We have a tweet. Collins winning governor seat means LePage names her replacement and can name himself.
Yeah, there would definitely this is a scenario that's out there. And I confess that I don't know all the details of how this works legally, but that is a consideration. I think there's a short window where he could basically name himself.
I think we're all hoping for a situation where they're standing around a table with the pens out and the paperwork and everything, and one has to sign it quicker than the other one, and they're trying to get the one right signed. But I don't know where that pops up. That's a lot of speculation, but I haven't seen anything that says whether he can actually do that or not.
All right, we'll go to Bangor and Larry. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm just always wondering why Senator Collins stays as a Republican. She seems to have nothing in common with the wackos from the West. I'm not saying she has a lot in common with the liberals from the East, but she certainly does not fit the typical Republicans. Why doesn't she become an independent? And obviously,
thanks, Larry, for your question. She's been asked this, hasn't she, Steve?
Yeah, I think so. And I think she's just always self-identified with the Republican Party. I mean, and listen, she isn't just a Republican with an R next to her name. I mean, she gives money to the party. I was tallying up numbers today. I mean, her PAC in D.C. has given money to the party, Republican candidates, Republican PACs in excess of over, hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, so she supports the same type of candidates that, they're not even in a remote stratosphere as her in terms of ideological views, but she's more of the Margaret Trace Smith mold Republican, which is this sort of centrist New England Republican that we all, sometimes New England Republicans get labeled that, even though I think in Maine in particular, the party has moved far right of that. I mean,
I think maybe this is naive, but I've always viewed Susan Collins and even more so Senator Snow as truly believing in the fiscal conservative philosophy.
I think that's exactly, if you boil it down, that's really it. I think that's true, because I don't think that she has the same appetite for, social issues at all. You know what I mean? If she could be described as, progressive on a lot of those issues.
And has demonstrated that repeatedly. I mean, she mentioned in one of her articles about the vote that Planned Parenthood was defunded in it. And I think she mentioned that that was one of the reasons she did not vote for it.
That's right. That's correct.
And, that is a rare statement for anyone with an R next to his or her name to
make. That's right.
Yeah, if you look at her voting record, she votes along with the Republicans a lot of the time, most of the time, the vast majority of the time. We noticed the ones she didn't. I think she probably sees this healthcare vote as something separate from all that, something that became partisan when it really shouldn't have been. If you look at healthcare policy, how it's been through the last 10 years, there's a lot of conservative stuff in the ACA. There's a lot of, and recently, I don't think she saw this as voting against her party. I think she saw it as voting against a bad piece of legislation. And the fact that she was the only one to stand up for that doesn't so much as reflect well on her as reflect really poorly on the rest of the senators who were told, vote for this, it's never going to become law, and voted for it and moved along even though they had these concerns about it.
Yeah, and I think to build on what Ben is saying is I think that bill in and of itself was really, a cynic might view that bill as basically trying to get Republicans out from underneath this pledge that they've had for years, ever since Obamacare was implemented and passed, and which is to repeal and get rid of it. This would have given the appearance, that's why they call it a skinny repeal, give the appearance of getting rid of Obamacare, but not really completely dismantling it. So they might be able to go around saying in the next election cycle that, yeah, we did. We took a good whack at it and that's it. But Senator Collins didn't see the value in that and saw what would have been the repercussions on rural Maine in particular. And I think, and on Planned Parenthood and those other services that
and,
you mentioned.
I mean, the premium too. I mean, you have the news of Anthem and the other, I can't remember which other health insurance company asking for increases or threatening to pull out. And she had mentioned this debate is destabilizing.
That's right.
We have an email from Rob, a different view on Senator Collins' vote from my daughter. As one of the two women who voted against the health care plan, she should have gotten more publicity along with a senator from Alaska. Obviously, Senator McCain deserved publicity, but my daughter felt some sexism in the press. It took courage from them. I saw a comedian tweeted something to the effect of Senator McCain getting all the credit is sort of like every work meeting ever.
I saw a similar one that said Lisa or someone. And that's a great idea. Would some man just recommend that now?
Right.
I think it's a little unfair because it was dramatic and it was a vote that people did not.
It is. I do think those cartoons and those comments express a general frustration of sexism that is still, I think, very valid.
I think it's an important point, though. I think I really do think that's important because they were out there for the longest amount of time.
That's
Senator
right.
Collins and Murkowski. subject. I mean, they were. Remember the press conference, the visual of, you know, President Trump calling in the senators, and who's sitting right next to him, Senator Collins and Senator Murkowski. I don't think that that seating arrangement was a mistake.
Right.
You know?
And
they were under a lot of pressure. In fact, Senator Murkowski faced, according to reports from the Alaska Dispatch, faced a threat from the Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke. That the roads and energy projects in her state may not get funded. That turned out to be a pretty ham-handed attempt at extortion because Senator Murkowski's
chair
of the Natural Resources and Energy Committee, which oversees Zinke's department, but still.
Right. No. And I understand both sides. I understand the feeling of sexism. I'm a woman, a professional woman, but also, I mean, Senator McCain just had surgery for brain cancer and came back to the Senate to make that vote. So it was pretty dramatic.
Absolutely.
So if you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566, our email, talk@mainpublic.org. We're going to take one more break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Friends School of Portland, where Quaker values create a culture of joyful learning. Information at friendsschoolofportland.org. Patriot Subaru, providing sales, service, and accessories on new and pre-owned all-wheel drive Subarus on Route 1 in Saco. And People's United Bank, N.A., striving to be the bank of choice for all business needs. Peoples.com.
Mixed martial arts is the most popular sport in Chechnya, the Muslim Republic within Russia.
In 2 years, the roster has swollen to 5,000 Chechen men and boys, and it's truly a cultural phenomenon.
The man behind it, Chechnya's president, is using the sport as a farm team for his own militia. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us for All Things Considered coming up starting at 4 o'clock this afternoon and running through 6:30. And coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock, Commonwealth Club of California. Today's speaker is Minnesota Senator Al Franken. That's the Commonwealth Club of California coming up at 2 o'clock this afternoon right here on these listener-supported stations of Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, a look back at the stories that made headlines in Maine during the month of July. With me in our studio, Steve Missler, Maine Public Radio's chief political correspondent. Ben Bragdon is editorial page editor for the Kennebec Journal and Morning Sentinel. And Kathleen Fleury, editor-in-chief of Down East Magazine. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. We have yet to talk about a topic that pops up during every month in a review show for the last few months, it seems. But there is another development in the whole NIPS. And for those of us who haven't been following this closely, NIPS are the tiny bottles of liquor that they wanted to put a deposit on. The legislature passed it. The governor vetoed it. The legislature overrode the veto. And now, Steve, take it from there.
Well, the governor, after he vetoed the legislation to put the deposit on, basically threatened to delist NIPS, making so that they can't be sold in Maine any longer. That decision was turned down by the liquor board, but not before the administration made the argument that NIPS are contributing to an increase in OUIs. This assertion has been made without any evidence, so I don't know if it's true or not. So, but that's where it sort of escalated to that point. And of course, the manufacturer of the NIPS disputes that for obvious reasons. They don't want to be associated with a product that, you know, is contributing to illegal behavior. So,
but it does make some sense because the reason this all got started, there were so many small bottles on the sides of roads.
Right. I mean, I went
suggesting
for a bike ride the other day,
people have yet thrown them out the window of cars. So,
right.
I had an interesting experience on Saturday night. I was driving home from a friend's in Monmouth to Camden, and we got stopped at a sobriety check. They were stopping all the vehicles, and I hadn't seen one of those in a long time, if ever, in Maine. But there had to be 5 to 10 Maine State Police. On Route 226. And my reaction is very grateful. I have two little kids in the back. The more sobriety checks, the better.
I've seen him, Kathleen. I think you don't get out much.
That is very possible, Jennifer.
I'm kidding. Ben, is there a bigger story in this small story about the NIPS?
That we can, create drama out of nothing?
It is pretty emblematic of.
Yeah, I was going to say, what is it emblematic of? I guess is a better way to ask the question.
You got to remember that when this bill first came up, the governor's objections were that it's anti-business, that it's going to be too big of a burden on the manufacturers and on the redemption centers. He made a big show of that, but then the manufacturers and the redemption centers said, "No big deal." You know, the littering's a problem. There's no doubt about that. There's really no way to argue that littering, these things are everywhere. And the bottle bill works. It's worked for years for everything else. So why not add those to the bottle bill and let it do its thing? And then the governor said, well, no, this is a drunken driving issue, even though this was an anti-litter bill. It had nothing to do with drunken driving. So,
and isn't that social engineering? Isn't that his argument for
so
the
glad
bills
you brought that, up.
Right.
Yeah.
That he just vetoed, like the cell phone thing?
Yeah, it,
to me,
smoking.
I just don't. I don't understand. I don't understand.
Yeah,
I mean that was his objection in the veto, right?
Right?
Is that this bill is social engineering? You're not going to be able to discourage behavior. Yet, as you drive up and down the turnpike, we have signs basically telling us not to. Text and drive.
And, you know, some of the governor's arguments make sense. I mean, these NIPs are tailor-made for drinking and driving.
And
that's not their purpose. Right. You know, they're found on the side of the road. It's not such a long shot to think that people are buying those and drinking them in the car. That's a correlation, though, and he didn't really have a cause.
There isn't the proof. You know what? We're going to go to Peter from Cherryfield, who I think is on this same topic. Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. It just coincidentally yet that I'm celebrating my AA anniversary tonight.
So this is
fresh to me. I would strongly state that my observation is that NIPs contribute to drinking and driving. I can remember way back when I used to drink and drive. I loved NIPs. So that's my view. I'm sticking by it.
Yeah, you know, I think. It makes a lot of sense, but when they brought this to the board, you know, I talked to one of the Liquor Commission members, the one who actually voted for delisting them, and he was having a real tough time kind of weighing both sides of this, and I thought that the administration might have more evidence when they showed up for this commission hearing. Not hearing from law enforcement really kind of did it for me. You didn't hear any police saying this is a problem, and without that, I'm not sure you can take them off the market.
Peter, thanks so much for calling and joining the conversation. We'll go to Maggie, who's calling from York Beach. Hi, Maggie. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I was commenting on Susan Collins. First of all, I wanted to say she did a great job voting against the repeal of the American Health Care Act. But I had a couple comments. I think the reason she was able to do this is that she reminds me, I grew up as an old Republican, Barry Goldwater type of Republican. The party has changed so much, and I think she still sticks to these standards. And I think it's very difficult for women in Congress, you know, to be in this big boys' club where they're all pandering to this kind of ignorant old man, you know, who has no experience or anything. And good for her, and I feel bad for people like Lindsey Graham, who was against it and yet voted to repeal, and John McCain. I think the whole thing was, I think he came there to repeal it. I really do. I think he at this point in his life, said this is bad, and he's been in government enough that he saw this was a bad thing. But I'm hoping that Susan Collins and the other women senators get all together and, you know, ignore this big boys club and pandering to the president and sit down and write something and amend the American Care Act and come up with some good ideas. I think she's smart and I think she cares and she has empathy. And I think most women in Congress do. I think it's very tough for them because it still is a boys' club. And
But the truth is there aren't enough women in Congress yet. And until then, we need men to step up, too.
And it was noted by many people that no female senators were on the panel that tried to rewrite the health care bill.
Yeah, they were all excluded from it. I mean, they took a lot of heat for that, and maybe
it's unacceptable. When you're planning health care for a nation, it's truly unacceptable to not have women and diversity of all manners involved, because as there's so much evidence that says when you get a diverse group around a board table, your business does better. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to run the country like you know, Trump Corp, let's get diversity around the table, because it helps the bottom line. And in our case, I think it would help with common sense, but also help everyone get healthier.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where this goes now. Does she get her wish, and do they reach across the aisle and try to work on something that is going to have bipartisan buy-in? Or are they the Republicans going to keep pushing this bill and hoping they get one more vote? Because they only need one more vote. And while Murkowski and Collins are solid, I don't think McCain's is on the same ground.
All right. We have a few minutes left. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Sue on Facebook sounds a lot like our former caller. Senator Collins does her job. She was elected to represent the people of Maine, and that is what she's doing. She reminds me of Bill Cohen, who also did the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I think she's standing strong in the old Maine tradition of politicians, frankly. I think that's a little bit on its way out. Given our many discussions about state shutdown and whatnot, but she's upholding that vision, I think, that we all have of the reasonable bipartisan Maine politician of yesteryear.
We'll go to Jeff, who's calling from right here in Augusta. Hi, Jeff. Go ahead.
Mike. But anyway, in reference to the NIPSD, definitely there's an issue with drinking and driving. Obviously, you want to just throw a bottle out the window for the fun and purposes of it. But what I have noticed in my lifetime is that people will buy one nip and then refill it from their own, whatever flask.
So they'll use it like a flask.
Essentially, yeah. So it looks like in social they're only having one drink, but really they're having, you know, 5 or 10 or 15.
Thanks for your call, Jeff. We'll move on to Portland and John. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I really want to say that I am proud of Senator Susan Collins and Senator Angus King, the steps that they took to oppose the skinny repeal. I think that there is a lot to work with within the ACA, and there is a lot of ideas out there about running a parallel system to it, representing folks that need high deductible policies, people that are self-employed that want to go with HSA type policies. And I think that they made the right move trying to salvage the ACA.
John, are you hopeful that they actually are optimistic there actually will be serious work done on making the ACA better?
I think I'm pretty optimistic, because there is obviously a need for that type of program. And there is equally a need for more bare bones health policies. And I think that both of those items are being represented. But if you are going to have a program like the ACA, it needs to be completely robust.
All right. Thanks for your call. We can move on here. We'll go to Jean, who's calling from Howland. Hi, Jean. Go ahead.
I'm calling about another. First, I love Susan Collins and Senator King. They're doing a beautiful job. But my call is about the NIPS. I don't know how many people think of this, but when you're cooking, sometimes you need a little bit of liquor. And you have to buy a big bottle of liquor to get a fourth of a cup, a half a cup, or whatever. Well, if you buy two little NIPS, you would have enough to make do your recipe.
So, see, now you're talking my language, yeah. Because I can't tell you how many times I have not made a recipe because I don't have something in the house,
totally.
And it never even occurred to me just get a nip of something like a dessert where you might have cognac or something like that, right?
Yeah, well, it's just costly when you start buying liquor, I think, by looking at
the
ads, you know.
If only we could prove most of the NIPS purchases were for that purpose, I think we'd all feel better. But
I don't think we have that many bakers out there.
I wish.
Yeah. And or recipes for Fireball,
right.
Which is the most popular
right.
NIP.
Right, yeah. Do any of your recipes
whiskey.
Call for cinnamon whiskey?
No, but I love cinnamon.
Yeah.
That's true.
Jean, thanks for your call. We're going to go to Diane calling from Sebago Lake. Hi, Diane. Go ahead.
Hi. I also want to comment on Senator Collins and Murkowski and McCain. I think they all did a fabulous job. However, I don't think it's gender. I think it's more having the courage to stand up for your convictions. And I think the two female senators had a lot at risk just speaking up. Senator McCain, yes, we all love him and think he's a very strong person. But I think it took more courage from the women who still have a career ahead of them and to, you know, speak with conviction and get people to work together. This can be done. So I applaud them.
Diane, thanks for your call. So it wasn't a matter of being a man or a woman, but being somebody who's courageous. Not a lot of that in politics.
I was gonna say, we need more
saying?
Of that, too.
Yeah, more courage would be good.
Yep.
Okay, Diane, thanks so much for calling and joining in the conversation. I think I have time for one more call, so we'll go to Deer Isle and Lori. Hi, Lori. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. And I do want to just briefly say that I think the most courageous vote in recent history in this country would have been to vote no against the Iraq war. But I called in just to mention that this woman, she's a senator, and I'm going to quote here from Daily Kos. She got no standing ovation. She got no mainstream media laws for her heroism. She got no kudos for leaving home, a much longer journey than that other senator, the one from Arizona, to get to D.C., and there were no mainstream media stories on it that I can find. She didn't do it for the publicity. Senator Mazie Hirono of Hawaii was just doing her job as a good politician, voting not to repeal the ACA so as to protect her constituents.
Lori, we're almost out of time, but is the senator from Hawaii, is she a Democrat?
Yeah.
I think it's because the expectation was that all the Democrats would vote against it, and that's why it wasn't didn't get more attention. I'm just guessing. I'm not part of the national media, but thank you for your call, and it is going to be our last call today. Very quickly, I want a prediction from all of you. Will August be a little calmer than July?
Yeah, I think maybe. We still have Wednesday, which is the veto day, so that'll be a very long day in Augusta, but Augusta is its own ecosystem, so I think the rest of the state is safe.
I don't know. You know, Russia, North Korea, nothing seems like it's going in the calmer direction, so I'm a little apprehensive to take that bet.
Yeah, every time it seems like it's quiet, something comes along that knocks us all for a loop, so whatever that'll be, I'm sure we'll be talking about it in a month.
Plus, there's a solar eclipse, right?
That's
all kinds of crazy stuff going on. So.
Thank you all. That's true. Kathleen Fleury, editor-in-chief of Downey's Magazine. Ben Bragdon, editorial page editor for the Kennebec Journal and Sentinel, Morning Sentinel. Welcome to Maine Calling. Steve Missler, Maine Public Radio's chief political correspondent. Nikki Shields ran the board today. We had additional help from Dan Works. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, renowned constitutional scholar Jeffrey Rosen. We will be live from the College of the Atlantic. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.